Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's September the 1st, and we are on page 816. No, I'm on the wrong place. No, I jumped in. Sorry.
We were doing
790. Yeah, I jumped in.
We were doing loose ends.
Yeah, I missed. Sorry. 794 and 796. Okay. Sorry. 794 and 796. I jumped in. Okay, so we were discussing, Miriam and Aaron speaking about Moshe Rabbeinu. We went through the whole thing. We went through the psukim last week. And we left a lot of loose ends. We said we would try to cover what we can this week. So the main issue to deal with, the first issue to deal with, which really is the issue that informs everything else in this whole discussion, is what was the mistake of Miriam and Aaron? The question is as follows. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah, that his prophecy was different than all other nevuahs. It's a difference in kind. It's not just a little bit better or a little bit worse. It is completely different. The way the Gemara describes it is that Moshe Rabbeinu saw ba'as baklaria hami'ira. He saw through a clear glass, where all other nevi'im see ba'as baklaria she'ena mi'ira, the cloudy glass, a glass that's not clear. That's an analogy, of course. But the point is that Moshe Rabbeinu sees more clearly than anybody else. We know that the Rambam writes that there are 13 things that we all have to believe. 13, you can call them the animamins, but it's not really the animamins. It's true that in the Siddur we have 13 animamins. They do not line up precisely with the Rambam's 13. They're close, but they don't line up precisely. But that's immaterial for tonight. The point is that there are 13 things that everybody has to believe. If the Rambam says if one does not believe those things, then one is a kofer. One is a heretic. You have to believe all 13. One of those 13 is this point that Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah he's the greatest Navi of all time. No other Navi has anything like his prophecy. So the place in the Torah where that is emphasized is right here, because after Miriam and Aaron speak about Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem appears to them and tells Miriam and Aaron in Pasuk, starting in Pasuk Vav, verse 6, we'll read them again, read these psukim again. Vayomer Shimuna Devarai, he said, listen now my words. Im yeh nevi achem, if you have prophecy, Hashem bamarai lav esfada, or if you have prophets, Hashem will speak to him in a vision, bachalom adaber bo, or I'll appear to him in a vision, bachalom adaber bo, I'll speak to him in a dream. Lo chein avdi Moshe, that is not so for my servant Moshe, b'chol beisi nem, on who in all my house he is the most reliable. Pel, pel, daber bo, I will speak to him mouth to mouth directly. Umarev v'lo v'chidos, with an appearance and not with riddles. Usmunas Hashem yabit, and he sees the picture of Hashem, whatever that means. So, that here the Torah spells out that ikar, that point that we all have to believe. The problem is that Miriam and Aaron must have known this prior to this incident. How could it be that Miriam and Aaron would not have known something for which a person is a kofer, is a heretic, if they don't know it, if they don't believe it? How is it possible that Miriam and Aaron could not have known this? That is the basic way to ask the question. But you can ask the question much more in depth than that. And that is that Hashem already told Moshe Rabbeinu back in Parashas Yisro that the Jews, Leman Yishma Ha'amadabri Imach, the Jews will hear when I speak to you, the Gam Bacha Yaminu Le'olam, and they will trust in you forever. the Jews are going to believe you. The Jews are going to know that you speak the word of Hashem. So how is it possible that Miriam and Aaron thought that somehow Moshe's nevuah was diminished?
Why would you say there's diminished? Just because they thought, okay, so we're Nevi'im also, and maybe his nevuah is different, but everyone else can separate. So why would you say, come to that conclusion that they're not thinking his nevuah?
If that were true, then Hashem would not be emphasizing this point. Hashem should just tell them, you know already that Moshe's nevuah is different than yours, and that means he has to separate. That's not what Hashem tells them. Hashem tells them, Moshe's nevuah is different. That's what he says to them. Well, of course Moshe's nevuah is different. I mean, how do they not know that? But I'm going to show you that it goes much further beyond that. Let's go back to Matan Torah. Let's go back to Parshas Yisro and the giving of the Torah. What happened over there with the giving of the Torah? You'll recall that there were different plans in how it was going to work. The original plan in Matan Torah was that Hashem would speak only to Moshe Rabbeinu. He would not speak to the Jewish people. He would speak to Moshe Rabbeinu. The only thing the Jews would know is that Hashem was speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu. We would not have heard any of the Aseres HaDibros from Hashem. And that's what the pasuk says, that Bavur Yishma Ha'am B'Dabri Imach. You can keep the place here in 794, 796. Let's go back to Parshas Yisro. Take a look at how that works. Page 402. Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe. This is the days leading up to Matan Torah. So Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Hinei Anochi bo elecha be'av ha'anan. Behold, I am coming to you in the thickness of the cloud. Ba'avur yishma ha'am bedabri imach. The nation will hear as I speak to you. I'm not going to talk to them. I'm going to talk to you. We, the Jews, will be the fly on the wall that is there when Hashem is speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu. V'gam b'cha ya'aminu le'olam, and also in you they will trust forever. V'yageid Moshe es divrei ha'am el Hashem, and Moshe told the words of the nation to Hashem. What are the words of the nation that Moshe told to Hashem? It doesn't tell us what the words are. Rashi tells us the words of the nation that Moshe relayed to Hashem were, we don't like this plan. We don't want to be the fly on the wall when you're talking to Moshe Rabbeinu. We want to hear directly from you. As Rashi says, Ritzonam lishma mimeka. They want to hear directly from you. Eino doma hashomea mipi shliach lishomea mipi hamelech. It's not the same thing when you hear from an agent than hearing directly from the king. Ritzoneinu liros es malkeinu. We want to see our God, our king. We want to see directly. We don't want Moshe Rabbeinu to be our intermediary. Now, what is going on over here? Hashem was telling Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm going to speak to you directly to teach you Torah. The Reshiver of Weinberg's Zohar Racha explained that Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah, which is Ba'as Baklaria HaMe'ira, which is through a clear glass, which is different in kind than regular Nevuah, which is Ba'as Baklaria She'en HaMe'ira, which is not a clear glass. Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah has a name. It has a name. Having Nevuah through a clear glass has a special name that other Nevuah does not have. That name is Torah. Torah is Nevuah that comes through a clear glass. All other Nevuah is called Nevuah. Moshe's Nevuah is called Torah. Torah is not Nevuah. Nevuah is not Torah. They're completely different. That's why it is critical that we believe this, that a person is a kofar, is a heretic, chas v'shalom, if they don't believe this. Because if you don't believe that Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah is Torah, meaning that it's completely different than other Nevuah, then you're saying, one is saying, that another prophet could come and contradict Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu says, we should keep Shabbos. Another Navi comes along and says, Hashem told me we don't have to keep Shabbos anymore. But when you believe that Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah is Torah, all of the Nevuah is not Torah, so then any other Navi cannot say something which goes against the Torah. Because Torah is a higher plane, it's major leagues and minor leagues, it's a whole different thing. Torah is a whole different level than all other Nevuah. So Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu at Matan Torah, this is before Matan Torah, he says, I'm going to come and I'm going to speak to you. You're going to get the Nevuah that is called Torah. You're going to get the Nevuah of Asbaklaria HaMe'ira, of a clear glass. The nation is not going to get that. They're going to be a fly on the wall that is going to be aware that I am speaking to you, but that's all. To which we said back to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu told to Hashem, they don't like that idea. The Jews are saying they don't want an intermediary. They want to hear directly from you, which means we put in a request, please do not do this. Don't speak Torah to Moshe, and then Moshe will relay it to us. Speak Torah to all of us. We all want to be Moshe Rabbeinu. We all want to receive Torah straight from Hashem. We all want to get a Nevuah ba'aspaklaria ha-me'ira through a clear glass. That's what we were asking for. How does Hashem respond to that? Pasuk Yod on page 402. Vayomer Hashem Moshe. Hashem says to Moshe, Lech el ha'am. Go to the nation. If you want to do this, that's wonderful. That's a great idea. You know what it's going to take? V'kidashtam hayom u'machar v'chibsusim lo sam. Sanctify them today and tomorrow and have them put their clothing in the mikvah. V'hayu nechonim v'yom ha'shlishi. They should be ready on the third day. Ki v'yom ha'shlishi yirein Hashem le'nei kol ha'am al har Sinai. Hashem is going to come down in front of everybody on our Sinai. I'm going to include the whole nation. Everybody is going to get Asbaklaria HaMe'ira. Everybody is going to get the clear glass. Everybody is going to get Torah. Not just Moshe Rabbeinu. And because of that, in Pasuk Beis, you have to separate everybody from the mountain. And a few rules about that. And then what does it say after that in Pasuk? Pasuk Yudalid, 14. Vayered Moshe min ahar el ha'am. Moshe came down from the mountain to the people. Vayekadesh ha'am. He sanctified the people. Vayechabzu sim rosam. And he washed their clothing and put in the mikvah. Vayomer el ha'am. He said to the nation, Heyu nechonim lishlosh eskamim. Be ready for 3 days. Al tigshu el isha. Do not get close to a woman. Men and women have to separate. That would not have been necessary had we not asked to get the Torah directly from Hashem. Had it been the original plan that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to get the Torah directly from Hashem, and we were only going to be a fly on the wall, knowing that Hashem was speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu, and then Moshe would relate to us what Hashem said to him, there would be no reason for us to separate. Men and women could stay together because we would not be getting Nevuah. Basbaklari Amir, we wouldn't be getting the clear glass. But we asked that we get Nevuah like Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay. Hashem said, yes, we agreed to your request. But now there's a greater preparatory process in getting the Torah. And one of the foremost points about that is, all the men and women have to separate for 3 days. And then you will get the Torah as you requested, directly from Hashem. Now we know we did it. We got the Torah directly from Hashem. We heard the first two Dibros. We became frightened. We couldn't handle it. And we said to Moshe Rabbeinu, well, Let's go back to plan A. Daber ata imanu v'nishma. You speak to us and we'll hear. Va'al yedaber imanu elokim penamus. Duh, Hashem shouldn't speak to us directly. We may die. We couldn't handle it. So we said, okay, it was nice for the first two dibros, but we can't handle it anymore. Let's go back to the original plan. You, Moshe Rabbeinu, you be the intermediary and tell us. But we were, at least for the first two dibros, on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. We all got nevuah, bas baklari hamira, through clear glass. We got Torah. Not nevuah, we got Torah. That is why, as the Gemara says in Maseches Makos, I've told this to you before, Torah tziva lanu Moshe. Moshe commanded us Torah. What's the gematria of Torah? The gematria of Torah, Taf is 400, Vav is 6, Resh is 200, Hey is 5. It adds up to 611. Because 611 mitzvos were given to us by Moshe Rabbeinu. Two of them we didn't get from Moshe Rabbeinu. We got directly. We didn't get the first two dibros from Moshe Rabbeinu. We only got 611 from Moshe Rabbeinu. The first two, we got Torah from Hashem directly. Because we got nevuah ba'as baklari ha-me'iru. We got the clear glass. We got the nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. We were, of course, we weren't really on that level. We were elevated to that level temporarily. And we got that nevuah. And that required separating men and women. Now, when Matan Torah was over, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, we said this last week, Lech emor lahem, shuvu lachem la'alechem. Go tell them, go back to your tents. Which means go back to your wives. That's it. It's over. Now everybody, go live normal lives. Don't stay separated. But, va'ata po amod imadi. You stay here with me. Now he didn't tell Moshe Rabbeinu directly, but Moshe Rabbeinu figured out that he is to remain separated from his wife. Which leads us to Miriam and Aaron talking about Moshe Rabbeinu. But they understood that Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah was greater than their own. They knew this. This is not news. Everybody understood this. Because at Matan Torah, we experienced it. It's not just that they were aware of it intellectually. They actually went through the process. And Miriam and Aaron, like everybody else, only lasted two dibros and then said, whoa, we can't handle this. Moshe Rabbeinu, you do it. And then tell it to us. Everybody did that. Everybody said that. So it's not that Miriam and Aaron were somehow unsure about the difference between their nevuah and Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah. And it's not like Miriam and Aaron were unsure of the need for Moshe Rabbeinu to be separated from his wife. They had to be separated in order to get that kind of nevuah. They also needed to be separated. So what is going on over here that Miriam and Aaron suddenly, they say, oh, how could he be separated from his wife? I mean, Hashem speaks to us and we don't have to separate from our wives. How come he is a... What? What do you mean? They understood full well. They went through it themselves not long ago. Within the past year, they've gone through this themselves. They went through it exactly as Hashem then appears to them and says, oh, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu is not like you. His nevuah is different. That's not news. They knew that. They'd experienced it. The whole thing is so difficult to understand. What were they missing?
Maybe they thought that, just like Hashem said, okay, now separate. He gave them time to separate. I need to speak to you. That Moshe didn't have the idea where Hashem could speak to him any minute, that it always had to be with some preparation.
Okay. That could be. And we pointed last week that Hashem suddenly appeared to them, which made Miriam and Aaron very nervous because they had not had a chance to go to the mikvah. And that showed them that Moshe Rabbeinu is on call all the time and you're not. So therefore, right, okay, that's a good point. But the Rishiva said something that he said something more than that, which we'll point out. You had a question?
I was going to say, didn't a lot of people have to separate anyway because they weren't in marriages that were acceptable?
Yeah, okay, but that was a limited amount of people. This was the entire nation. Yeah, there were those who had to separate because they were, that's true.
So, Miriam and Aaron didn't hear Hashem's command to Moshe to stay with me.
Correct. But he didn't command them. Moshe Rabbeinu did it on his own, and the Gemara says that he figured out what Hashem wanted him to do. Right. So no one heard that. There was no command.
So they did, I mean, if they had known that this was from Hashem.
Yeah.
But maybe they thought just Moshe on his own.
They did think that, but why would they think there was something wrong with that? Hashem appears to Miriam and Aaron and says to them that, hey, you're missing the boat over here. Moshe Rabbeinu, he's different. He has to separate. They should have been aware of that from the experience of Matan Torah, which they themselves went through.
Right, but the experience of Matan Torah was so obvious where Hashem said, okay, you want to speak Hashem, we have to separate. So that was so different. So like they really were just making a common theme. This is how it is. When Hashem wants to speak to you, then you separate.
Okay.
It's the same thing, but it seems so...
Okay, so here's what the Rashiva said. Rav Weinberg's Hanaracha, when he spoke about this, he said as follows. Miriam and Aaron knew full well that Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah was not Nevuah, it was Torah. It was Bas Baklaria Meira, that it was through a clear glass. They believed that 100%. They knew that. They were not Chas V'Shalom Kofrim. They weren't heretics. They knew better than we know. They understood that. They went through it themselves. They knew. Their mistake was they thought that Moshe Rabbeinu's experience was like their experience at Matan Torah, only more often. Which is similar to what Mrs. Dutch is saying, but just to say it a little more sharply, the Rosh Hashiva said it. The experience of Matan Torah actually served to trip up Miriam and Aaron. It served to mislead them a little bit. Why? Because what happened at Matan Torah is that a nation of several million people who were not on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu were temporarily, artificially elevated to the status of Moshe Rabbeinu. We all experienced it, but it was temporary and it was artificial. People who really were not ready to hear Torah were only ready to hear Nevuah. We were artificially given the status of someone who's ready to hear Torah. Now, we couldn't handle it. That's what happens. You do something to someone who's not ready for something. So we see that all the time. When you give someone an experience they're not really ready to handle, they think they're ready, but they're not really ready, right? Then they can't handle it. So that's what happened to us. We asked for it. Hashem said, we're going to do it. And then in the end, we couldn't hack it. Okay. But that's what happened. That millions of people were given a status that really was beyond them. Miriam and Aaron believed Moshe Rabbeinu was definitely better than everybody else. And Moshe Rabbeinu could handle it a lot better than everybody else could. No one else could handle it. He could handle it. That's why we said, you do it and tell us. Moshe Rabbeinu can handle it. But they believed that just as when the rest of the Jewish people were given Torah, real Torah, not Nevuah, but Torah, the first two Dibros, it was artificial and temporary. They believed that Moshe Rabbeinu is really a regular Navi like everybody else. But when Hashem chooses to teach Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, he artificially, temporarily moves Moshe Rabbeinu up to a higher level and gives it to him, just as he did to the millions of people at Matan Torah. They did not believe that Moshe Rabbeinu was inherently on that level. They believed that Moshe Rabbeinu was certainly a great man, perhaps greater than everybody else. Nevertheless, at the end of the day, he's just like everybody else, just a little bit better. He's really a regular prophet. But when it's time to teach Torah, and Moshe Rabbeinu is able to handle this better than anybody else can, Hashem takes him and artificially bumps him up in order for him to receive Torah. But after that's over, he's bumped back down to his regular status. And therefore they said, why does he separate from his wife? I would get it. He has to separate when he is receiving Torah. That makes sense that we had to do that also at Matan Torah. And he needs to do that frequently because he gets Torah frequently. But he doesn't get Torah all the time. So why does he permanently need to be separated from his wife? If he would have, if they would have heard from Zipporah, oh, my husband, he separates from me so often, that wouldn't have bothered them. That makes sense. He has to separate because he's getting Torah. So of course he has to. But that's not what she said. She said, always, he's permanently separated from me. Well, what is that? Why is that? What's that all about? Why is it permanent? That's what they didn't understand. To which Hashem says to Miriam and Aaron, you are not understanding Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not that Moshe Rabbeinu is artificially, temporarily given this incredible status of Aspaklari Ameira, of the clear glass of Torah. That is Moshe Rabbeinu. He is actually on that level. He really is on that level. It is not a temporary artificial thing. He really is on the permanent madrega of one who sees Ba'as Baklaria HaMe'ira through the clear glass, one who is receiving Torah. It is not something that happens artificially. And therefore, you don't understand that Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah is different. It's not that they didn't understand that when he got Torah it was different. They didn't understand that inherently he was a totally different person than anybody else.
From the moment that he was born? Or from
No.
At what point?
So that's a good question. It does not seem that it was from the bush. It seems that it was closer to this time. I don't know when it happened exactly, but it seems that it was progressive. It doesn't, it's unclear exactly when it took place. Yeah.
Do you think that confusion came that they were siblings?
It could be because they were siblings. And remember, Aaron and Miriam themselves were very great. Mm-hmm. They were of the greatest of the people. Someone on a lower level probably would not have made that mistake because they'd be so far from Moshe Rabbeinu. How could they? But here, like you're saying, Miriam and Aaron, they're closer. They're closer in kinship. They're closer in level of Nevuah. So then it could be that's why they made this. But that's the way that Rav Weinberg, the Rashiva Zichron Levracha, explained what happened over here. And that answers the questions that we had. It answers how could Miriam and Aaron not known that Moshe Rabbeinu, his Nevuah was greater? They knew that. They understood that. They experienced it themselves. They didn't know that you have to separate. They knew you had to separate, but they didn't understand that it was permanent. That's what bothered them, because they didn't understand that Moshe Rabbeinu was inherently on that level. They thought it was artificial.
But how, I'm going to play devil's advocate. How didn't they, how many prophecies did Miriam and Aharon get? Moshe was seemed always talking. Hashem was always
good,
talking.
Good. That's a good question.
And Miriam got one when she,
We don't know how many prophecies they got. Remember, the only prophecies that are written down are the ones that are Hutzuchu L'Doros, that we need for all generations. But there were millions of prophets, and they got all kinds of prophecy, so it could be Miriam and Aaron were constantly receiving prophecy. We don't know.
Okay.
We don't know. But to answer your point, they weren't questioning that Moshe Rabbeinu gets Nevuah a lot. Right. They were questioning, they were saying, sometimes he gets Nevuah and it's Torah. Sometimes he gets Nevuah and it's not Torah. It's just regular Nevuah.
Okay.
Hashem was telling them, no, you don't understand. Every time he gets Nevuah, it's Torah. Okay. Every time, every single time. He doesn't go back and forth. He is on the level of Torah. Everybody else is on the level of Nevuah. It's not that Moshe Rabbeinu is bouncing up and down. He's up there permanently, because that's what he is. And that was the mistake.
I know you keep saying mistake, and but they didn't know. Isn't there a way that Hashem could have showed them and the rest of the Jewish people that Moshe's always like that without embarrassing Miriam and Aaron and Moshe also?
He could have. I don't know the answer, but you have to say if Hashem punished them that they are to blame on their level. You have to say that somehow.
I understand. I'm just not seeing it.
I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
Plus he had a different arm or something.
What's that?
He had to hide his face. Because he had a different arm. But he had it from what
the... He was glowing. He was glowing and he had a cover.
He already had it when he was born also.
No, you're right. That's true. You're right. When he was born, it says the whole...
Right.
But his face glowing was after Matan Torah. Matan Torah.
So he was always different than that.
Yeah, so that's true. That's true. And perhaps that will answer Mrs. Luz's question, right? It could be that they should have figured it out from the fact that his face was glowing. Mm-hmm. Evidently, that wasn't enough to prove to them that it was a permanent thing. Right.
But also, this is the example of Ashenhara, right? That is
usually, yeah, this is our example, right.
And so you're saying that, okay, so that Moshe Rabbeinu, that, you know, that Hashem could have done it a different way. This whole event and whole exchange and this whole conversation is the epitome of what we're supposed to be staying away from. And so it couldn't have been that Hashem would say, give them Musar a different way. It had to be, look, you know, you shouldn't have done it. You shouldn't have said that. You shouldn't have,
okay.
You know.
Okay, so you're pointing out that once it happened, and it would have been better if it didn't happen. It would have been better if they didn't make the mistake.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Once they made the mistake, Hashem's reaction to it with the tzaras and everything is in order to teach a lesson. That, and then as the Torah says later on, you have to remember what happened to Miriam. That is our example. And as the Chafetz Chaim points out, the Aveira here is so subtle. I mean, this is Lashon Hara. When we talk Lashon Hara, we're talking about stabbing someone in the back. We're talking about, you know.
Malicious. Not a misunderstanding.
Right, a misunderstanding.
Well, the mindset really comes from it's stemming from exactly the same thing. And I love to point this out that, you know, the two big situations in the Torah where we have siblings. Two big incidents of Lashon Hara in the Torah are siblings. And it happens
in Saint Yosef and the brothers.
Yeah. And you have this. And it's also together. So it so often happens, like I say this that often when we have get-togethers with families getting together, it so often happens that the siblings think that, you know, our siblings, we just have to get them right. It's just a different relationship with siblings and have to, you know, we have to set them straight. They need us to tell them what to do. Always. And so that would have what happened with the Shvatim, with Yosef, and then Yosef back, and then here, Moshe, and big people.
Yeah, yeah. Just have to be careful not to dumb it down. The level they're on, they're being held responsible for very subtle things.
But is it not true that this is like, example of Lashon Hara.
Yeah.
No,
but the Chafetz Chaim says if this is Lashon Hara, all the more so all the stuff, all the petty stuff that we do is much worse.
All stemming from the same thing.
Yeah. Not, yeah, it comes from the same root.
Not understanding.
Not trusting others.
Okay.
Of, right?
Jealousy.
Well, I
don't know that it's jealousy. They might have been on Tzipora's side. They might have meant it well-intended. How can we help Tzipora? Right.
So that's,
I mean, to me, it's not clear that it's at all malicious or malintent. Right. I think it's that they feel badly for her.
So that's why I don't mean to be dumbing it down. I'm really saying Lemaisa. Like, this is exactly what happens with siblings.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're right.
It's not, you know, really, we really have to help them. They really don't know what they're doing, and we have to, you know, and it doesn't happen. I mean, it doesn't stop any generations, great grandparents, whatever, and the sibling, as long as they're siblings, it seems like we feel like this need to, you know, set them straight. And so if how can we be responsible not to do it if Miriam and Aaron did it? You know, but it's impossible.
That's
better than Cain and Hevel, who didn't talk to each other, and that was worse. So talking is actually better.
No, how can we
That was also, but saying something directly to the sibling would not be Lashon Hara. That may be, you know, somewhere.
So maybe that's what we need to be learning.
It's talking about the sibling.
Yeah. Right, so if you have to go to the source, go straight to it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Now, So again, this was the Rosh Yeshiva's explanation for what happened over here. And therefore, what we now learn from here, what is the Torah actually telling us? The Torah is not really telling us that Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah was greater than everybody else's. That was already understood from before, from Matan Torah. What the Torah is actually telling us over here is what we just said, that Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah is, Moshe's permanently on that level. He's a completely different person, and that's why the notion of Moshe Rabbeinu separating permanently from his wife is a singular event. We'd have no other example like that in history, that someone is told that they should remain permanently separated from their spouse. We don't find that, because it's only Moshe Rabbeinu on his level that's required. Everybody else is not expected to do that. So that's what you see over here. Now, the we went through the psukim last week about Hashem calling them out and then pointing this out to Miriam and to Aaron. And then it says that Hashem got angry at them and he left and that the cloud moves away and now Miriam has tzaras. So here we have the it's not the first incident of tzaras in the Torah. We had tzaras actually 1, 2, 3 times before this. First, at least explicitly, you know, in the Midrashim and etc. First time is when Sarah Imenu goes down, is taken by Paro. Paro gets Saras over there. We have it as well, that when Moshe Rabbeinu at the bush puts his hand in his shirt, takes it out, he has Saras. And we also have that Paro got Saras and was bathing in the blood of the Jewish children in order to get rid of the tzaras. So we've had those incidents before. But here we have a direct punishment, tzaras, for Lashon Hara. Even though Moshe Rabbeinu with his hand in the shirt was also, the Rashi explains over there, that was also because of Lashon Hara, because Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Vehem lo yaminu li," the Jews aren't going to believe me. And Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, "You just spoke Lashon Hara about the Jewish people." So this was hinted to him, and that his hand got saras. But here we have a much more direct example, and that's why this is held up as the example. The Torah says we must remember what Hashem did to Miriam, and that is our paradigm. Stay away from Lashon Hara. Look what happens when a person speaks Lashon Hara.
Do we know why Paro had saras?
We talked about it back then. We did discuss it back then. So, fine. So, now, as we mentioned, there was no regular way of removing this saras, because typically, or not typically, the way the Torah prescribes the way saras is removed is that the Kohen, and only the Kohen, can pronounce a person clean of saras, having saras and being clean of saras. And here, there is no way to do that because Aaron and Aaron's sons are relatives, the direct relatives of Miriam, and therefore they are unable to purify her. And therefore she would have been stuck like this permanently. So that's why Aaron needs to go to Moshe Rabbeinu and say to him that, what, have mercy. You know, this is like, as we said last week, if you look at Pasuk Yud Aleph 11, Vayomer Aaron to Moshe, Be Adoni, my master, please my master, Al Nas Lashay Salinu Chatas Hashanu Anu Vasher Chatanu, don't hold against us the fact that we have sinned, we've done this terrible sin. Al Nas Hi Kameis, don't let her be like someone who is dead, because someone who has Saras is like they are dead. Hashem would say, So may Recham Imo, in that, now he's speaking in the third person, but it's a euphemism, he really should be speaking in the second person, that when, since he came from the same womb, from the same mother, in other words, you come from the same mother as Miriam, vayeyachel chatziv v'saro, it is as if half his flesh has been consumed. Because your own sister now is as if she is dead. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu needs to daven to Hashem, vayitzak Moshe al Hashem lemor, kel na refan na la, Hashem, please heal her, please.
I thought the person doesn't have Saras till the Kohen says it's Saras.
Yes,
so
yes.
How can this Kohen, who is related, how can he say it's Saras?
Right, so it could be that she would not have had the halachos of Saras, but her skin would have been diseased.
And then that's why she would have been stayed that way for her whole life.
Right. Now, you bear in mind, we talked about this before when we talked about Saras. Saras is a contagious disease. It's a very contagious skin disease. But there are two parts to Saras. There's the physical part, and then there is the halachic part. In order for a person to have halachic Saras, the Saras has to fit very, very specific parameters. If it does not fit those parameters, the person still has the physical ailment of Saras. It's just not the halachic sickness of Saras. And therefore, the person might be Tahar, but they're still very contagious.
There's a separation between the physical and the spirit.
It's the same thing. There is a physical component, meaning, what I mean to say is when a person, God forbid, has Saras, whether they fit the halachic parameters or not, they are contagious.
And it doesn't...
So when you say contagious, somebody who goes near them will catch.
Yeah, that's why they would always quarantine someone who had tzaras.
Oh, what about the kohen? Right. But I didn't realize.
Yeah,
that
the kohen has to risk it.
I didn't realize that you could catch it.
Yeah, you can catch it. The Gemara speaks about it.
You've not done anything.
The Gemara speaks in Maseches Ksubos about Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who was willing to learn with those who had tzaras, even though it was a contagious disease, that he was willing to do it. He said the Torah would protect him. So for him, it did protect him. For him.
So when a person was tame or had tzaras and was considered tzaras, did their curing of the contagious part correspond to when they became tahar?
Well, let's say the other way around. Did their curing of the tumah correspond to not being contagious?
Right.
The answer is not necessarily. Miriam's skin remains diseased for many years after this incident. There is a pasuk later on in the Navi, in Divrei Hayamim, that there was a nace that her skin became clear again. But that was much later, not
the
now.
The whole time she was contagious?
I don't know if she was contagious or not. I don't know how contagious it was, but she was diseased.
It is probably the reason why it's been translated as leprosy.
Yeah, it could be. That's why it's translated as leprosy. Yeah, yeah. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu davens to Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu davens to Hashem. Kel na rafa na la. That's what he says. We spoke about this in Parshas Tazriyam and Sarasa. Okay. Kel na rafa na la. Now this is a very short davening. It's one of the shortest davenings you'll ever find, perhaps the shortest. Five words. Kel na rafa na la. Chakras will be a lot shorter if that's the way we daven. Okay. So Chazal say, why did he daven such a short davening? So Chazal say, because since he was davening for his sister, had he davened a very long davening, people would say, he's just davening for his sister. He doesn't care about us. He wouldn't daven like that for us. So Moshe Rabbeinu deliberately made it a short tefillah, so it wouldn't appear that he was bending over backwards for his sister, and rather, he did a short tefillah. Nevertheless, we do learn from here that when one davens, it is appropriate to add in some words of appeasement when one davens. You don't just say, Hashem, heal her. Hashem, please heal, please her.
There's the pleases.
There's supplication. You don't just, when one davens, one doesn't just say, Hashem, heal her. There, it is appropriate, even though you say, well, I'm talking to Hashem, what do I have to...
Beg.
Right. But davening is meant to be something which is a supplication. And therefore, when we daven, we do that. We put in different words and we say things that are to make it nicer, to make it, more of a supplication. So say, if anybody needs to go to Mincha, please don't wait. I already davened.
I have a question. So when he's saying this, does he know exactly what transpired, or he just knows that something happened to give her tzaras?
So I wouldn't put it past Moshe Rabbeinu. He was a very smart man. So right? So I don't know. The Torah doesn't tell us what he knew, what he didn't know, but it's very likely he figured a lot of it out, or all of it out, based on what happened. It's just hard to know. Okay. Now, Hashem tells Moshe, okay, fine. I'm going to heal her, but there's a consequence. Before I heal her, first, there's gonna be a period of quarantine. And the way Hashem says it in Pasuk Yudalit is, V'aviha yarok yarak bifaneha, had her father spat in her face, halo sikalem shivas yamim, she would be shamed for 7 days. Therefore, tisager shivas yamim mechutz lamachaneh, she should be locked up for 7 days outside the camp, v'achar tayasef, then she will be gathered in. Now, first of all, spat in her face does not necessarily mean spitting in her face, because the same language is used with, where else do we have spitting in the Torah?
With the chalitza.
With chalitza. Good. So with chalitza, there it says, v'yarka bifanav. And she spits, now bifanav could be translated in his face, but that's not what it means. It means in front of him. The halacha is, when chalitza is done, the sister-in-law spits on the ground in front of the brother-in-law who is refusing to do yibum. So, bifanav, in his face, doesn't mean at his face, it means in front of him, that's what it means. So therefore, here it does not have to necessarily mean, now this didn't actually happen, Hashem is saying, is giving a comparison, an analogy, but it doesn't have to mean in her face, literally, it might mean in front of her. Had her father spat in front of her, wouldn't she have been shamed for 7 days? Therefore, she should be locked up for 7 days. Now, before we discuss what is being brought up over here about spitting in front of her or in her face, what does that have to do with Tzaras? Before we get there, there is a critical, axiom that is derived from here that affects the entire Torah. And I'm talking about halachic areas of the Torah. Even though this is a story, but there are halachos that are specifically affected by this story. And the reason is as follows. It's a little technical. I'm not going to get into grandiose examples. We're just going to just bring up the idea just so you're aware of it, because it's derived directly from here. We know that the way that the halachos of the Torah work is that things are derived one from the other. The Torah can't write every single case down. There's literally billions and billions and billions of details and cases that could be written down. So the way it works is the Torah gives us many cases, and then from there we derive, from one thing we derive another thing, we derive another thing. One thing is derived from the next. Now, whenever you derive one thing from another thing, so often the way it works is by comparing something which is more stringent to something which is more lenient. So, for example, you could say something to the effect of, well, if for something which is very lenient there is a punishment of lashes, then perhaps something which is worse than that will also get lashes. You can write, you'll compare a lenient thing to a stringent thing. You'll say, well, if the lenient thing gets this, well, then certainly the stringent thing gets that. If something which should only get a slap on the wrist gets lashes, so something which we understand should really get punished badly should get lashes. That's a common tool throughout the Torah. That kind of logic. So there is a rule in that logic called Dayo. Dayo is spelled Dalet Yud Vav. Dayo means it's enough. What does Dayo mean? Dayo means as follows. And I'll tell you how the Torah says, how the Gemara says it over here. The Hashem says, if her father would have spat in her face, would she not have been shamed for 7 days? Now, here, it wasn't her father who spat in her face. Who, so to speak, spat in her face?
Her father,
Hashem. Hashem gave her tzaras. So it's like Hashem spat in her face or in front of her. So the Gemara says, if for her father she'd be shamed for 7 days, well then for Hashem, shouldn't it be at least 14 days? Shouldn't it be at least double? I mean, we're comparing a human being to Hashem. So, I mean, that comparison is anyway difficult. But if for her father there would have been shame for 7 days, wouldn't you expect that for Hashem there should be shame for at least 14 days? So the locking up should have been for 14 days. The Gemara says Dayo, which means it's enough. Which means whenever you're comparing two things and we derive one from the other, you can only derive what you already have a precedent for. Even if logically it would seem we should add on and add on and add on, we should really bump it up, you don't do that. You maintain what you found in your example case, and when you're applying it to the new case, you apply it exactly, apples to apples. You don't make it more. So you don't say, for example, well, for something which was really, really lenient, there was lashes. So for something for more stringent, we should kill a person. You don't say that. You don't just bump it up higher. You don't do that. That is called Dayo, and that's derived from here. This is where it comes from. This is where the Gemara, Maseches Bava Kamma, derives the entire concept of Dayo. That even though really Miriam should have been locked up for 14 days, because the shame of Hashem, so to speak, spitting in her face is at least double that of her father spitting in her face. Nevertheless, she was only locked up for 7 days because it's being derived from the case of her father. Now, her father never happened. Her father never spat in her face. It is only an analogy. But the Torah is expressing it this way to teach us the concept of Dio, to teach us this concept that we don't bump it higher. Which, of course, begs the question, why does the Torah embed that rule here? Didn't have to. Hashem could have just said, lock her up for 7 days. So, I mean, that would have been enough. But Hashem instead presents it in this seemingly logical progression from which we derive rules about logical progressions in the Torah. Well, if it would have been her father, it would have been 7 days. And therefore, 7 days. But not 14 days, even though it's Hashem. It seems unnecessarily complex. That's what it seems.
You say Dio, but it's the same to me as with Amalek. They did something wrong, and forever we're supposed to remember that. I mean, we have to remember what Miriam did. She's being embarrassed forever.
Yeah, so you're talking about that part of it. You're right. But the Gemara's focusing not on that part. That the Torah says, you have to remember forever what she did. The Gemara's not deriving that from anywhere else. This is only when you derive one thing from another. Here, the way it's expressed is, if her father would have spat in her face 7 days, therefore, when Hashem shamed her, also 7 days. That's the one point the Torah is making.
But, is that what we said? Pesach Dayenu?
It's the same word. It's the same word.
Same word.
Just the same word. It's the Aramaic word for it's enough. Okay. Yeah.
So the thing is, every person, anything that happens is because of Hashem doing it.
Yes.
So here, it's why it's not a Dio. It's exactly the same thing. Any Torah is not Hashem.
That's true, but it's not when a human being uses their free will to shame you. That's not Hashem doing it. That's the person deciding to shame you.
Oh, we have this debate.
Right. I mean, that's the person deciding.
But it's still from Hashem. So it's coming from Hashem, access to being bad, whatever system.
Yeah, but you're still embarrassed because of the person, you're not embarrassed because of Hashem. If a person shames you, you're embarrassed because of the person.
So in this case, because there was no other person, then it's obviously as Hashem. Like, I mean, here we differentiate, the differentiation that you're making here, that Aviha is not her father, it's really Hashem.
No. Had her father, Amram, spat in her face, she would have been embarrassed for 7 days.
So why are we talking about her father?
That's the question. Right, what is all this? It's unnecessarily complex. What do you bring all this up for? Just say, lock her up for 7 days. That would have been a lot simpler.
But what's it saying with her father and the spitting and her face?
That is exactly what I'm asking. Exactly the point I'm asking. Yeah.
And why would she have been humiliated only for 7 days? If my father spit in my face, I'd be a humiliated. So
you would never live it down.
Right.
Yeah, you would never be able to look at your father.
Is that from a certain sort?
Good.
So we're supposed to be learning what is it, why it's talking about her father here.
Okay, so what we have here is, let's articulate the questions. Number one, why is this here at all? Just say, lock her up for 7 days. That's number one. Because that's what happened. That's what Hashem was telling them. That's number one. Number two, had her father spat in her face, she would have been shamed for 7 days. Why we bring that up? First of all, her father never spat in her face. Second of all, how do you know it would only been 7 days?
Right.
Maybe she would have been embarrassed for a lot more or a lot less. Well, where does that number come from? What does spitting have to do with Sarah? We're comparing. I mean, maybe Sarah is more embarrassing than spitting. Maybe spitting is more embarrassing than Sarah's. Well, that's not apples to apples. What is this whole thing?
Humbling. Both of them are humbling.
They are definitely both humbling. Yes. But more than that, her father spitting in her face. Let's isolate that for a minute.
It's been a private thing.
Okay, that's true. That's not on her skin. It's not on her skin. But wait, let's just isolate that for a minute. Her father spitting in her face. For what?
Shaming him?
Well, because siblings, this is the children, you said something bad about my other child. You know, because we just had the other thing where Moshe and Arkan, because they're coming from the same womb.
Okay, good.
Coming from the same womb.
Good,
you know,
okay, good. That's okay. Good. So we mentioned this last time that this is coming on the heels of coming from the same mother. And then had her father spend it. So.
Remember we learned that they got divorced?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Who's her real father?
I don't know what,
you know who her real father is, but
Amram.
When they say.
It really means Amram.
It means Amram.
Right, okay.
Amram. Now.
Cause that's her biological father.
Yeah, Amram is not alive anymore. He's not alive anymore, but.
He's not spinning
anymore. But anyway. So, are we going to, I shouldn't say he's not living. It's unlikely he was alive. Let's just put it that way. So are we going to say that, are we going to say that Hashem is saying, here you have Miriam and Aaron doing something wrong to Moshe Rabbeinu. So had it been her father who would be disciplining her for this, he would have spat in her face. So you're saying it's very difficult, right? What is
also she? Aram knew that Miriam was the one responsible for making bringing Moshe into the world.
Okay, good. So we're just going to mention good. I'm just going to mention
because
one last.
She kind of almost embarrassed her father to get back with the mother.
Okay, good. Wait. Hold on. Wait. That point that you just made, that Miriam is the one who is responsible for bringing Moshe Rabbeinu into the world. That is precisely why the nation waited for her. The nation did not travel. Why? Because since she waited at the Nile, when Moshe was put into the Nile, and why did she wait at the Nile? Chazal say the reason she waited was because she had the Nevuah. She had the prophecy, and she wanted to see what was going to happen with my prophecy. She waited at the Nile. So it's all because of her. So it comes full circle over here that it's through her that Moshe Rabbeinu is here in the first place, and he's the one she speaks Lashon Hara about. The whole thing comes. Okay, so we have still several things that we have to cover, and me and Sashem will do that next time.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.